Welcome to the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast series. Our show is brought to you by the Frictionless Guest app, which allows innkeepers to provide guests with their recommendations of the best local places to eat, play, and shop during their stay. The Frictionless Guest app is accessible through all mobile and desktop devices, and you can learn more about it by visiting frictionlessguest.com. Once again, that's frictionlessguest.com. I'm Matt Langan, and I'll be joined by Steve Short, the founder and CEO of the Frictionless Guest app. And today we're speaking with Brian Coleman, who is the GM of the Biltmore Greensboro Hotel in Greensboro, North Carolina. Brian will be discussing the history of the Biltmore, his overall service mentality, as well as his use of the Frictionless Guest app. And Brian and Steve, how are you both doing today?
Good morning. Great. How are you?
Doing well. Steve, how are you?
As always, Matt, I'm doing well and looking forward to the podcast.
Excellent. Always great to hear your voice. So let's start with the history of the Biltmore Greensboro. Brian, we'd love to hear more about that.
Absolutely. The building itself was built by Caesar and Moses Cone. They came from New York. They were textile moguls and just happenstance to run across a small little community in North Carolina that was a community of Quaker farmers who had been left alone through the Civil War, pretty much untouched in our area by that conflict. And so what they found was that the Quaker farmers had amassed huge amounts of cotton and indigo. So once they bought a local iron mill, converted it into a cotton mill and started producing printed cottons. 2 years later, the city of Greensboro in the state of North Carolina will take notice and sue Cone Exports and Commissions Company, forcing them to open an office here in Greensboro to be able to retain the tax money. So in one day, Jeanette and Caesar Cone will purchase every available piece of property in what was then known as downtown Greensboro. And the plot that the building sits on now was one of those plots of property that they purchased. Given that they were forced by the city to open an office here in Greensboro, they will move their families here. Just Caesar and Moses Cone will move their direct family here. Their more prevalent sisters will stay in Baltimore, and the rest of the family will stay in New York. But they will, as I say, they'll bite their thumb at the city. So what they do is they will build an office building here in Greensboro, a three-story brick and cast iron structure with a workable basement. And to show off a little bit, be the first building in downtown Greensboro that will be completely wired with electricity, faceted with a new technology of indoor plumbing. And then in 1920, they'll go a step further and install Greensboro's first electric elevator. Cone Exports and Commissions Company will house their offices, cotton brokers, attorneys. The entire business will be ran from this location. From 1903, when they move into the building after it's completed, right up until 1925. By 1925, they've got all three of the mills up and running, and they need a larger facility, so they'll build a new building just around the corner from their original operating headquarters. At that time, cotton brokers, Mullins being one of those, will purchase the property from the Cones. In 1925, they will lease the first two floors to the post office, so it becomes the original annex for the Greensboro Post Office, and then they'll use the upstairs floors as offices. And then in 1927, the upstairs floors will be sold to a very colorful lady from Stokesdale, North Carolina, Ava Taylor. She has inherited quite a bit of money from her husband, who was a veteran of the Civil War and was a very large landowner and farmer in Stokesdale. So she will use this money to establish 10 apartments, five on the top two floors of this building. It will be a two-room apartment with a tub and a toilet. Tenants of those apartments up until 1933 were all females. Each apartment is rented at a rate of $2 a day, and that again gives you the two-room apartment, a living room, bedroom, a bath, a toilet, and a maid, which is a total of $14 a week if we're doing the math. And the average Caucasian male salary in Greensboro at the same time period is only $2 a week, and these ladies were paying $14. So we'll let the listeners do the math and figure out exactly how those ladies were compensating their rent here at the building. Ms. Taylor will own the building right up until 1965, but the post office will leave in 1933 when a young woman's body is found at the foot of the steps. It caused a bit of a scandal, so the post office will up and move, and Ms. Taylor will be brought up on charges of impropriety. So keeping her from getting in trouble with the city, the gentleman who owned the first floor, you know, on paper, will buy out Miss Taylor upstairs, leaving her as proprietress of what will become known as the Greenwich Apartments. So in 1933, once the whole building has been converted into apartments, it can boast of being the first of three residential properties in the entire state of North Carolina that offers you a private bath. So Ms. Taylor will have a very colorful reputation for the next 27 years until the building is actually closed in 1965 due to an explosion that's in the basement. Now, if we remember how the building was built, this is significant because it being a brick and cast iron structure, whatever explodes in the basement could only go up because there was the force evident would not be great enough to blow out the brick, especially once you're below street level. Ms. Taylor will blame the explosion on the boiler, but the damage that's done, curiously, to the building is in the backside, past the elevator to the back wall, and at that point, below the street, was the only entrance into that basement. And we also have to keep in mind that Ms. Taylor is in the only building up until 1943 with a workable basement and hot and cold running water, and the entire building has been plumbed with copper pipe. And she's also known for buying crates and barrels of juniper and corn mash from the local mills. So North Carolina is synonymous with its moonshine production, so we will assume that Ms. Taylor is making gin and moonshine in the downstairs in the basement if she's providing other entertainment from in the upstairs. So when the building is closed in 1965 due to this explosion, it will be then be reopened in 1968 on New Year's Eve, and it will carry the name of the Greenwich Inn. Now, what they have done is they have taken Miss Taylor's 15 apartments, has turned them into 20 guest rooms, three kitchens, a boardroom, a banquet hall, a ladies' lounge, and a gentleman's lounge, female quarters, and male quarters. So when the Greenwich Inn opens on New Year's Eve of 1968, for every two male guests that are currently in residence, we'll have a butler. Every two female guests will have a maid. All 20 rooms will have their very own housekeeper. There'll be one head chef that runs a kitchen on every single floor with a staff on every single floor to deliver breakfast, lunch, dinner, just whatever the guests may have wanted or needed at that time period. The Greenwich Inn will boast of having guests such as Richard Nixon and Gloria Vanderbilt. So in 1989, as the downtown Greensboro starts to decline in popularity, like most downtowns did with the advent of the internet and strip malls and that sort of thing, downtown falls out of popularity, so does the hotel. So what they try to do to revive the popularity is they'll change the name. So in 1989, through permissions of Gloria Vanderbilt, the owners then will get her permission to be able to use the Biltmore name, given the caveat that it has to contain a destination, so not to be confused with the Biltmore Hotel that was recently opened at the same time in Asheville on the Biltmore Estate. And what they had done was that they did a bit of a sprucing up of things. The building does carry a 1903 aesthetic. All of the rooms look more like a bedroom, less of a hotel. And the interior was never intended to look like the inside of a hotel. What they wanted to do was to create an old-fashioned kind of feel and operation to the hotel, given that during the same time period through the late 60s and early 70s, Greensboro is experiencing a corporate boom, given that it was a Quaker village. Things were slow to progress to modern times. So at this time period, there's steel glass buildings going up all over the city. So what they wanted to create was the exact opposite of that. So that Will Rain is then currently, it still carries the name of the Biltmore Greensboro Hotel. And I came here through becoming was a housekeeper at first. Now I'm the general manager. I ran my own cleaning business for construction and staging for realtors. So after becoming a housekeeper here, I took on the position as the maintenance supervisor, then the head of housekeeping, and then when the Brian the First, as we affectionately refer to him as, he decided to up and leave and move to Florida, I threw my hat in the ring and sent the owners a resume, and that kind of brings us up to where we are now.
But that's great. Steve, did you want to jump in? I know Brian just dropped so many amazing nuggets of information on us there. So I figured you might have some follow-up questions.
Yeah, well, on the history side, because I love the history and I don't want to dwell on that too much, but you talk about Vanderbilt, Nixon. Were there other, did you also, in our kind of prep call, did you mention Elvis maybe stayed there? Or I mean, are some of the other well-known you can definitely associate, you know, with the Biltmore?
Oh, absolutely. During the days of the Greenwich Apartments, Miss Taylor was rumored to had entertained Clark Gable and Elvis Presley. Clark Gable was one of the, of course, the stars of Gone with the Wind, and it would premiere at the Carolina Theater, which is literally just around the corner from us, in 1934. And then Elvis Presley will perform at the Carolina Theater during the late 50s to early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So given that these gentlemen's reputation, Miss Taylor's reputation, they would literally had to have walked either from the train station just past the building to get to the Carolina Theater. And I'm sure there's very little doubt that Miss Taylor didn't entertain along not only Clark Gable and Elvis Presley, but also large corporate or folks that were coming to Greensboro. So you have the operators of Levi Strauss, you have the operators of Wrangler, which will eventually move here to Greensboro in the mid-40s. And then more recently, since the building has been, you know, does have 116 years of history, and then later on, like we mentioned, it would be Gloria Vanderbilt, Richard Nixon, and then those high-profile type guests would have been the only ones that could really afford to stay at the Greenwich Inn. More recently, about 5 years ago, we had, I hope I have this properly, I think she was the Princess of Jordan, and then Loretta Swint has been here. I couldn't tell you what the Princess of Jordan looks like because they kept her covered the entire time. Literally, wow. When she was about in the hallways, there was always this entourage around her, and her face was covered, and you never actually got to see what she actually looked like. But then we were graced with Loretta Swint, or Lorraine Swint, the actress that played Hot Lips Houlihan on MASH.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, she came and spent a weekend with us. We hosted the reunion of the Mukden POW camp from World War II. It was the last of the POW camps that the Allied soldiers were made to walk to. And when it was liberated, there was, out of the 150 that was dropped off, there was only 15 left. And as of about 4 or 5, well, actually, that's only been about 3 years ago, there was only 10 of them remaining. And the youngest one being about, you know, 83, 84 years young, as he said.
Yeah,
but since then, you know, it's been politicians, large businessmen, and that sort of thing. We've hosted Eddie Money when he performed at the Carolina Theater, the Go-Go Dolls, the Indigo Girls. We even had a visit by a lot of the entertainment that's booked into the Carolina Theater, given that they're a historical location, too.
That's cool. Now, what about time frame for you when you first started, you know, doing that, helping with the housekeeping or whatever, while you were also had your other business going? Was that 2005? Is that right?
Yeah, I started working here as a housekeeper full-time and gave up my personal business just because it became too much of a headache. But that was in 2009. And then by 2012, I had worked my way up, and then that's when Brian the First, when he decided that he was moving to Florida. So about 3 years' time period went from the housekeeper to the general manager. And didn't have any, and did want to put out there, without any sort of proper hospitality education or training, I had never worked at a hotel before, never operated a hotel. I did, before owning my own business, work as an auditor for the Blockbuster video chain through Viacom Incorporated. So I knew the ins and the outs of how to run a business on the way that they did it, but coming to hospitality was a bit different. And I did notice when taking over the operations here at the Biltmore Greensboro that things didn't quite operate the way that I thought that they should.
Mm-hmm.
So
before you kind of get into that and the whole that whole service approach that you've changed around, can you talk a little bit about the tradition of that whole English style that started back when it was the Greenwich Inn, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what it's referred to as is the English service standards. And these are service standards that were cultivated by the Edwardians and then through the turn of the century were put into common practice mostly by the Victorians. Unless you were in the upper echelon of society here in America, you didn't have butlers and maids and footmen and hall boys and chauffeurs and that sort of thing. So there was a very small group of folk here in the States that recognized that. But in England, of course, with the aristocracy, they had huge staffs of maids, butlers, chefs, chauffeurs, hall boys, people who mended, you know, who took care of stables and that sort of thing. So the Greenwich Inn took that, and of course didn't have it on that scale, but they did have butlers and maids and housekeepers, and they still had the hall boys. So a typical day would be you would check in, guests were ushered to the elevator while hall boys and bell boys would have taken their luggage from the front desk up the stairs to their room, had it all unpacked and stored their luggage before they ever made it up in the elevator, and would be disappeared and completely gone because it was bad form to be seen in the hallways. So if you were a male in the morning, there would be a knock at the door at whatever time you requested. You would have been assisted by a butler getting dressed and ready for your day, and then brought down to the gentleman's lounge for breakfast. The same situation would have been similar to the ladies, or the single ladies anyway. Single ladies would have been had the same scenario, except they would have had a maid, and they would have been brought down to the ladies' lounge for breakfast, while married females are allowed to stay in bed and are served breakfast in bed by a maid. The thought process behind this was that married women didn't have a need to be up in the morning and presented to the world because they were married. They had a husband. And then men and women were not, it was bad social, bad form to congregate unless it's a proper meal setting. So breakfast was one of those loose meals that if you were single and unmarried, you were expected to come down for breakfast. But here at the hotel, they kept that separated. They didn't want the single gentleman and the married gentleman mingling with the single females. So, and then around 3:30, 3 o'clock every afternoon, there would be hot tea served in the lobby by maids and butlers. And then at 6:30 every evening, they would serve wine and aperitif in the lobby as well, while maids and butlers are upstairs in your room preparing your dinner, should you not have had, you know, reservations at one of the local restaurants. So everything happens without ever you ever seeing it. At one point, the hotel did have a set of upstairs and a set of downstairs. I mean, you never go up the downstairs or go down the upstairs. Everything goes in a cycle to ensure that well-oiled machine constantly run as it should. But it's not necessarily a standard that we now would probably, as they say, cotton to, because we have, you know, very much of privacy. A lot of people have privacy issues nowadays. So, you know, if you were a guest then, you were very much accustomed to that assistance because you're of the social caliber to be able to afford that, when a lot of people, you know, wouldn't know what to tell a butler or how to act if there was someone helping them get dressed in the morning and, you know, that sort of thing. But we, of course, don't do that any longer because people wouldn't recognize it, nor I think that people would appreciate it as much now as they did back then. But we do as we can in that same mentality as when we provide service to our guests now.
And when you took over, talk about what you really did to sort of change the culture. It's not, I mean, you really did sort of change the mentality as far as everybody in the hotel working toward interacting with the guests as opposed to just being there, basically.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I took over as GM in 2012, there was the whole automated phone system. There was an automated coffee maker, which was like a little pouchy thing that you put in there and it hissed and whirled and spit out brown water. Anything that didn't take the human hand to actually accomplish, I done away with. So you'll only find coffee pots in the rooms that make a single cup at a time. We even went as far as at the front desk when breakfast service is done. In our dining room, it's the old-fashioned pour-over method of making coffee. The front desk did kind of give me they gave me the side eye when I took away the coffee pot, and then after I took away the automated machine as well. The thought behind that was if it's touched, then you can control not only the quantity of it, which of course is the bottom line of a business, but most importantly is you can control the quality. Anything, this is just my personal opinion and a service standard that I appreciate and that we've obviously been very successful at executing, was as a person-to-person interaction with folks, with guests, most importantly, because they would notice as you check into large chain hotels, you know, it's very polite as you check in, but once you're given that key and you walk away from that desk, you could be anybody. And that's not what hospitality is. Hospitality is a smiling face, a greet, is knowing that there's someone there if you need something, but not in your way. So I totally changed the way of our mentality was. I took the focus away from those menial tasks of paperwork and pushing a pencil and making sure that, you know, we still ensure that all of our T's are crossed, our I's are dotted, but if it doesn't affect the guest directly, it will wait, because as I tell our staff is we don't let our job get in the way of us doing our job. So our job first and foremost is making sure that our guests are comfortable, happy, well-informed, and that they need what they need while they're here. Not to be, you know, well, I'll be with you right in a moment when the phone rings, or I've got to finish this report, I'll be right with you. No, that will wait. It has to, because it doesn't drive customer service. It doesn't drive our hospitality point of view. So getting rid of all of those automation and actually having a person do it. Even took away the automated phone board. So if you call, you will talk to a live person 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. If there is a, of course, like any place, you can still call from room to room. But if a wake-up call, per se, most places, you know, the phone rings, you pick it up, and there's this electronic automated voice on the other end, cold, you know, it's not an actual person. So that's not what we do. We pick up the phone, we hit the buttons, the phone rings in your room, we let you know the time, we let you know who we are, and that's a wake-up call. And to a lot of people, and a lot of the GMs I've spoken with, even with the larger chain properties, is, well, that's not very efficient. Well, it doesn't take any more time to program in that electronic as it does for the individual just to pick up the phone and dial the number. But what that does do is it does show the guest that there is someone there. I mean, if they need them, that's where we branched off from the service that the Greenwich Inn provided. They know that we can't provide butlers and maids and bellhops and chauffeurs any longer. But what we can do is we can get as close to that as possible, still staying within the comfort zone of people's privacy and the guests. So we do, we do everything by hand. Coffee is made by hand. The only thing that we outsource is our laundry, and that wouldn't be done that way if I had somewhere large enough to actually hold the equipment. I think anything worth doing is worth doing well, and it's always done better when it's done by a set of hands.
That's great. That's great.
It may not be always the efficient way of doing it, but it is always the best way of doing it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So now, it's good service, and like you say, it's hospitality. What you do, in your opinion, is hospitality, whereas...
Hospitality.
Right, whereas what others do is not really hospitality in some cases. So, but there is, like you say, there's a business to be run here. What talk about the effectiveness. Has this worked out well from a business perspective? And talk about the staff and transitions and how that went over when you decided to tell everybody, okay, you're no longer sitting at the front desk doing paperwork with your head down when somebody walks in versus instead of getting up and greeting them and asking if they need anything or whatever.
Right. So there was a bit of an upheaval once I took over and took away all their automations. People, you know, they're like, well, what do we do? You know, the front desk was like, well, how do we make coffee? Well, how do you make think they make coffee before they had a miniature coffee maker? We'll make it that way. So, and that just grew from there. So a lot of the staff didn't hang around once they had to get up from behind that desk and actually, in my opinion, actually do something that was productive. So we went from, we'll use Google for as an example. In 2012, the hotel probably had, it did have about a 2.5-star rating. Their occupancy fell somewhere between 30 and 35%. There was a staff of 2 housekeepers, a maintenance person, and 3 front desk people. And that's all that they had. Now, there still has always been someone here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so that there's not enough hands to now accomplish all of these tasks that I now want done by hand. So the staff of 4 or 5 folks becomes a staff of 12. And, of course, the owners, they're investors. They're not hoteliers. So they're always looking at that bottom line. They're like, Brian, you have increased our payroll budget. Yes, but here, let me show you what I'm going to give you in exchange of that. So 5 years, right? 2012 to 2019. Oh, well, that's 7 years. In 7 years, the occupancy rate has come up 20 points. We now land around 50 to 55% on a typical month of occupancy. The ADR is now $40 more than it was 5 years ago. Our staff is happy. Our guests are happy. And we know this because on every single site, if you look for the Biltmore Greensboro Hotel, you will not find less than a 4-star ratings as a whole. Now, of course, given that we're a 116-year-old hotel, the elevator is 99 years old, the plumbing was put in 1903, it was updated more recently than that on some count. But how do you make people happy with that in a world of shiny glass, leather, brand new boxes? Well, that's what you do. What you don't have, you compensate for in service. We don't have a swimming pool, so we will compensate that with service. The service has always been key. So what they traded for was the 20% more in occupancy, $40 more on their ADR, and the actual room revenue increased about 75%. In a matter of 5 is where we are now. And that was the changing of service is the only thing that changed. The hotel, yeah, the room, some of the things, you know, we did new bedding, we did flooring, we redid the windows and things like that. But people don't stay at a hotel because you have pretty bedding. It's a service, it's a hospitality, and since I've been here, we have never had a customer, but we have had over 10,000 guests, and there's a difference. A customer mm-hmm. might be someone that walks in your door maybe once, maybe twice. A guest is someone who repeatedly comes back because they enjoy the space, they enjoy the service. And it's just like walking into someone's house. You know, the front desk staff is, do I really have to say hello to the same person 600 times if they make 600 trips out in and out of that door? Yeah, just like you would if they walked into the living room of your home. You would greet them, you would be as kind as you possibly can, and do everything for them within, you know, parameters of being a hotel and the laws of North Carolina. And all of that was the growth, the exponential growth was, like I said, was a direct correlation of the service.
Fantastic.
That service standards that we changed. And from that, we tried different, more modern approaches to it. We tried the SMS systems, which guests found to be kind of a little bit too personal. You know, it was a text message back and forth from the front desk. One talk about efficiency of having someone just sit there waiting for someone to text you back. Not an efficient way of doing it. So we were very, very pleased. I was very, very happy to find the Frictionless Guest app.
Yeah, at first you would think, well, wow, what does this GM who is big on, you know, personal interaction with guests and doesn't want to automate things, why is he interested and why is, you know, in the Frictionless Guest app? And talk about your perspective on that.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so why does someone who's completely hung up on doing everything by hand have an app? Because that seems, you know, so juxtapositioned completely in the other direction. So what we did, we don't use any other form of modern technology. We, you know, send emails and that sort of thing, which is just the times. But the app itself is what I loved about it was completely customizable for where we are and to the property using it, but it's an extension of that service to where sending a text message, you know, different text messages to an SMS system to guests, that's a little too close, like I mentioned before. I mean, you don't get that spoken to, you don't get that face. So when you check in, we give you the information. So you can use the app if you choose to. You choose not to use it, it's completely up to you. That's the choice made by the guest. Some people use it if they don't want that interaction. That, you know, gives them that comfort space. Some people use it and still want that face-to-face interaction, so we'll walk them through the process of how to use it. But what I love the most is once you've walked out our front door and you're out into the city, Greensboro's not huge by any stretch of the imagination, but it can be a bit daunting and a bit overwhelming for, you know, folks that don't travel a lot or people who don't come to a large city very often, or, you know, who doesn't want to aimlessly walk around downtown not knowing where they're going or what they need or where anything is. So we put this in their hand. That way, when the guest leaves the hotel to go out and about to the city, we're still there. We're still, you know, in the palm of their hand. If they need one place to the next just by tapping the little tiles, it sends them around the city. Or they can hit the one that we have that has all of our services loaded into the tiles, and they can contact us back if that's what they need. But I saw this, the Frictionless app, as an extension of that personal service that we already provide because we give it to you. Unlike any of the other things that we have used or experienced, which causes more distance. And you can see that. And that's part of the spiel for the companies that do the SMS and that sort of communicating with their guests, is it puts a distance there. These are just words. I mean, a text message, there's not a person, there's not a personality behind it. And you didn't actually get to talk to anybody. Just a strange person that you didn't know sent you a text message. We do send the link to our guests every single morning. We take our check-in lists, we take the phone number, and that's the text message that you get from us. If, like I said before, if you decide to use it, it's up to you. If you decide not to use it, that's perfectly fine as well. But knowing that you have us the entire time that you're in our city, I think makes people feel, A, more like a guest, less like a customer. They feel like there's somebody on their side, and they also, it's not as intimidating knowing that all I have to do is just call the hotel and they can tell me where to get or how to get there if I can't figure it out on my own. So it gives you, you know, someone at your back, but it also allows you to be a bit more independent without, you know, that still keeping that face-to-face interaction.
And what's the response been of the guests that have given you any feedback about using it?
Oh, the people who have used it have absolutely loved it. I have not had one negative feedback from any of the guests. We rolled this out, I think, maybe a month and a half, 2 months ago. And people love it. They think it's the neatest little thing in the world. They're like, well, how come everyone doesn't have this? And I was like, I don't know. That's my question, too, because it's super simple to set up. It's super simple to use. And even someone who's not a tech guru like myself can appreciate it. But it's like we have a beer, just as an example, we have a large microbrew and an IPA community here in Greensboro. There's four breweries just within walking distance of the hotel. So people who enjoy that, you know, we can say, hey, you know, if you're looking for this place, you can take a tour if you want to. You just tap this one, and then when you're done there, you tap this one, and it's going to take you to that place. And, you know, by the time you've made it to the fourth one, you might actually just need to call us, and we'll send a cab after you. But, you know, as we tell people, you know, feel free to go out and have fun out in the downtown area. It's so close, you can always crawl back if you have to. But, you know, we have our taxis to pick up folks just because they weren't where they were. And that was, they were able to contact us back and let us know what they're needing at when they're not even at the hotel, because they don't have to look up, they don't have to Google our phone number, they don't have to search for an email address. All they have to do is just type that little tile, and the phone number, email address is there. We even went as far as having a list of the employees that are here. So we have all of our employees listed on the app as well, and then soon there'll be pictures there. So that, you know, who was that guy I was talking to when I walked out? Oh, I can't remember his name. Well, here it is. I'm going to tap this, and it's going to show me his picture and give me his name. So if I do need something, I'm going to be like, hey, Mike, you know, I'm down at Gibbs Brewery, and I've got turned around, and I don't know where I'm at. So it's just, again, another extension of being able to put a face to a name in front of a guest, which all around changes people's moods, changes their perspective, and hopefully brings them back. Because, you know, just ask yourself, how many times have you checked into a hotel and been like, well, where do I go? What do I do? Where is this at? And Google is a beautiful and wonderful thing, but if you don't know where you're going, you don't know what to look for. You know,
yeah,
so with
too much stuff out there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's too much stuff. So with this, you can limit it down. You can put all the little, everything under its little tab and have it all organized and neat. We even went as far as when we host wedding groups. Just this past weekend, we had a bit of a high-profile wedding group that was staying with us. And, of course, you only get the app if we give it to you. So what we did was we created them an entire tile for just them. That way their guests would know where they were supposed to be at what time, how to get there, who to contact, the itinerary for the wedding, the whole nine yards. So, you know, no one goes anywhere without their phone. So it was, again, right there at their fingertips, and they didn't have to, if they chose to ask questions, they could. And again, if they didn't want to actually talk to somebody, you didn't have to. That is my favorite part about that, and it's so very simple, and it's actually fun to use. I use it myself. I'll go downtown and go, okay, I'll go here, and then go here, because I'm horrible with directions.
That's awesome as far as the other ideas with, you know, the wedding thing. I noticed you also have, like, you put events out there daily, and you also put the history out there with some images that maybe some additional images that weren't on the website, I think. I could be getting that wrong. But, yeah, I think that most guests, once they book, they aren't going back to the website. And, you know, once they're there, especially, yeah, they're going to be on their mobile phones a lot of the time or their tablets or whatever. And the info on the websites, even though it's find a list, you know, things to do and that sort of thing, but it's not interactive. How do I get there? Where is it relative to the hotel and all of that? So,
And it's not just limited to while you're a guest. While you still have it, of course, as long as it's active. Of course, as we know, you can still pull it back up even after you've left to check out. So if you do have a guest that enjoyed themselves, what an easier way to get their attention again. I was like, oh, I was using this little thing. So if I press this tile, I can press this email, this link here that we have put there, and it takes them right back to our website so they can book all over again. You know, some places will give you a pen or a notebook or some silly hat or something to be like, you know, don't forget where you were. Well, this is on their phone. The one thing that they never let go of, the one thing that they're always looking at, and people remember using it, and that's what causes them to come back and book again. You know what? We had a gentleman was like, I just pressed the little address here, and it took me right to your website, I booked my room again before he ever left the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like you mentioned, we do keep a weekly calendar of the events that happen weekly inside the city. So if you're here on a Monday, Tuesday, whatever the day of the week is, and you're looking for something to do, well, this happens every Monday, or this special event is going on. And it also gives, especially the front desk employees, the staff there, a reason to talk to people. It's an awesome icebreaker. You know, have you looked at the app yet? You know, there's some great restaurants within the location just here around us. So it's a talking point, and then it's a tool as well.
So did they actually take out their phone do you have a tablet there at the desk, and they kind of show them around a little bit, like, here's basically how you use the app?
Interesting.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Good idea.
So, and that, again, drives home that mentality of the service. Even though it is a modern technology, even though it is something that you can take with you, it's still explained to you, showed to you, and, you know, an overview of what it is by an actual person.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it starts. So the app is just an extension of that service that people, in my opinion, should already be providing.
Awesome. Great. We normally don't talk about the app during the podcast, so I guess there's some shameless commerce going on, but you know, in the pre-podcast call when we talked with you, it was just, your comments were so amazing, and I was like, wow, I'd like some people to hear this. So, no, I really appreciate the feedback and the positive feedback, especially.
Oh, well, you're welcome. It's a great little thing. It really is. It has been, on several occasions, just in the past couple of months, have been a lifesaver. You know, if you have large groups coming in, they haven't been here before, but they all want to go to the same place, or their company has booked them, you know, dinner at one of the restaurants. They're like, where is this at? They just gave me a name. I'm like, oh, well, don't worry about it. Just hit this little button right here, and it'll walk you right there. So, you know, and because if I give directions to anybody, 5 minutes later, they're going to be like, well, what? What did he say? He said to go where? You know, because I'm used to giving this. I'll just ramble it off without even thinking about, you know, how fast the other person is comprehending, or are they even going to remember what I said? So that long conversation becomes a much shorter conversation, which can have more of a quality conversation. And then once they leave, they don't have that pressure of having to remember it. They just press the little, I call them tiles. Press the little tile, and it tells you how to get there from wherever you're standing.
Yep.
It's super.
Excellent. That's what we tried. That's what we tried to do, and we continue to try to improve it. So good to hear.
And an excellent job you've done.
Thank you.
Good.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, is there anything more to be said after that?
Yeah, this could be the anything else to add question here, our favorite rapper ending question. Anything else to add?
To listeners, to those people who have habits of staying, if you're a big box chain property, then do that. But I would encourage people to check out their smaller boutique places when they travel. You'll find that a lot of those will provide you with a better experience, or a bit more flexible in their policy and in their procedure and their operations, because they can be. And challenging folks to be wise on where they spend their dollars, because they're not easily come by. So seek out those places that is going to treat you like a guest and not like a customer, because at the end of the day, you pay to stay at a hotel. So if I'm giving you my hard-earned money, I'm going to expect a certain level of service. I want to be talked to, and I want to be treated like a person, and I want to be respected. And that is the most important. And you'll mostly find that at your boutique, bed and breakfast, smaller properties, they have the time and they have the inclination to be able to provide that type of service, to where, not to corporate hotels, because they're great if you need a place to sleep.
That's great. Wow, what a perfect way. Yes.
Yep.
Anything else to add to that, Steve, before we do the outro?
I think that says it all.
I think so, too. Perfect. And for all of our listeners, you just heard an exclusive Frictionless Innkeeper podcast interview with Brian Coleman. He is the GM of the Biltmore Greensboro Hotel in Greensboro, North Carolina. And as you heard, he was kind enough to share the history of the Biltmore, share his overall service mentality, as well as highlight his use of the Frictionless Guest app. And we really hope you enjoyed this episode of the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast series, brought to you by the Frictionless Guest app. If you wish to learn more, please visit frictionlessguest.com. Once again, that's frictionlessguest.com.